Okay, episode 2, which we are calling Clune Speak. Were there any words or phrases that have surprised you that they became popular?
Yes. Let's say, for example, truth corn. I mean, what the fuck? It's corn that makes you tell the truth. This is the stupidest thing in the world. And yet everybody's like, ha ha ha, this is brilliant. I'm like, whoa, okay.
If you say something is true, it's hashtag truth corn.
I use truth corn all the time. And it's just one of those things that obviously it comes from the lightning struck heart.
I might have just said truth corn. Hashtag truth corn.
Truth corn. Truth corn is always, you know, always comes up.
Hashtag truth corn. You say that out loud, I bet you have to answer some questions.
This is the Clunatics Podcast. I'm Kurt Graves. After learning how the Clunatics group was created in our last episode, I think it's important that we offer a guide for any new TJ Clune readers who might be joining us. Let's be honest. If you're new, you won't have any idea what we're talking about if we don't give you some vocabulary lessons and a primer on the culture of the Clunatics. I wanted to dive right into exploring what that group has become, so I started by asking this question. What are the characteristics of a Clunatic? Here's Mia, one of the Clunatic admins.
It's a very hard question because I don't think there is any one single characteristic that would define a Clunatic. I think for me, it is people who believe in found families, who are really open to new ideas and concepts. And I don't think you could define a Clunatic. Some of them are crazy. Some of them drive me nuts. Some are such quiet, incredible achievers. Some of the Clunatics have the biggest hearts of anybody I've ever met in my life. They're funny, they're irreverent, they embrace all sorts of ridiculous ideas and concepts and characters, and the capacity to love others and to listen. I don't know, they're just a really special bunch of people.
We found a group of like-minded people from all walks of life. We support each other. We help each other. There are professionals and blue-collar workers, stay-at-home moms or dads, and people with doctorates in quantum physics.
That's narrator Michael Leslie reading from T.J. Clune's How to Be a Movie Star. It turns out that everyone I talked to found it very difficult to define a Clunatic.
My name is Jane, and I am a proud Clunatic.
Jane is a top contributor to the Clunatic's Facebook page, and she has some expertise in this area that we'll dive into a little later.
You and I are sitting here on two different parts of the world, and really the only thing that's brought us together is we've read some of the same books.
And so, in order to even begin to explore TJ's work and fan base, in order to introduce new Clunatics to this group of weird, wonderful people, I think we have to start with language. I figured out pretty quickly that this group has its own vernacular and a singular culture that's grown up around it. What happens when a group of people embrace an author's language choices and start using them to communicate with one another?
If I want to describe someone as particularly handsome or beautiful or attractive, I always use dashing and immaculate now.
A lot of the Clune speak that has filtered in would be phrases like sweatballs, or I always put an S on gods, like gods damn it.
You know, you don't love something forever, you love it five ever. If you're gonna hug, you're gonna hug for 7 minutes in an alley, because that's how long a hug should last if you mean it. And if you want it to be a little awkward and uncomfortable, you're going to hear the word dude a lot.
Dude. Josie breathed.
Whenever Mia says dude, I get the giggles inside, like so bad. When I changed my phone and there were certain words that, you know, Clunatics and other words that we write a lot in the group, and my phone didn't predict them, I was so frustrated. I was like, why can my phone not remember these great words? Come on.
Anytime I press the letter K, sending a text message, it automatically fills in Clunatic. I don't need the L, it's just the K, and that pops up.
They are all hashtags. Pack, pack, pack. Clunatic 5 Eva, Clunatic rule.
I hadn't really got into the habit of hashtagging anything until I read TJ's work, and now I hashtag because I find it hilarious.
Hashtags were involved, of course.
If I type in hashtag H, it's going to come up hashtag heart boner. And if my new phone doesn't do that fast enough, I'm annoyed.
It has probably ruined autocorrect on everybody's phones forever.
And at first, a lot of the language that I saw being used by the Clunatics I wasn't familiar with, because I haven't had a chance to get to those books yet. Instead, I know a lot of these words because Clunatics use them all the time.
Tyson, my husband, actually will often text me code orange banana.
This is Clunatic and podcast producer John Steiger.
And I'm always like, what? And then I respond, and it's never a code orange banana, but he likes to text that one to me.
I don't know what code orange banana means. What is that?
Oh, well, I think you're gonna have to listen to Why We Fight to get that, Kurt. I don't wanna spoil that book for you. But it's sort of I will. It's sort of an emergency call. It's a non-emergency emergency. Sort of there's a crisis, but it doesn't really involve an emergency. I just need to call and tell you or talk to you about what's going on because it's clearly a code orange banana.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yes, and you manage not to spoil any of the plot of the book.
So many hidden meanings, Tigers whispered reverently.
Today is going to be an okay day.
This is top Clunatic contributor Tanya Hess from St. Paul, Minnesota.
You know, Gustavo is my man. It's the best advice. You know, it may not be a great day. It's just going to be an okay day. And that's all right. It's okay. You go through.
I've always had such a hard time telling if that is a good phrase or a bad phrase.
To me, it's a good phrase. Just saying, you know what? It's okay. It's going to be okay. I don't want to say you're forced to put on a positive face. You just kind of feel that way. And it's not going to be the best day ever, every day, but that's okay. And as long as you just start doing what you need to do, that's okay.
I used to have a coworker who I didn't get along with for a lot of reasons, but she was one of those people who, like, at the bottom of her email had "make it a great day." Like, she never said, yeah, have a good day. It was always like, make it a great day. Like, you got to control all the circumstances in your life that made something a positive day or not.
Yeah.
It was like, I was like, lady.
Yeah, no.
I was like, I can control my reactions to things, but I can't stop you from being an idiot. And I can't stop other people from making my life hard. And I can't stop the snow from falling. And I can't stop the car from running out of gas. Or like,
yeah,
there's things that I have no control over. So that I like that perspective on today is going to be an okay day. That it not yeah. every day has to be like, today is going to be a great day. It's like, no,
yeah,
today can just yeah. be a day.
Yeah,
stop putting
and
so,
that's okay.
Stop putting so much pressure on today.
Exactly.
Today has a lot to deal with.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I told myself I was going to have an okay day. And I did. Be good to each other. We'll all have okay days.
As I talked to people for this episode, something that I heard over and over again was that this language taken from TJ's work has become a kind of emotional shorthand that helps Clunatics make connections with one another.
If we just look at what the shared language in the group is, then I think the shared language is TJ's language, really. It's his turn of phrase, it's his idiom, it's those inside jokes that we all use as a bit of a shorthand to make connections with each other. And that's what I think is interesting about watching the group dynamics, is we build that shared language that we're lifting from TJ's narratives.
I think I've seen the shortcut language change, and you know, people know what it means when you say hashtag truthcorn. People know what pack, pack, pack means. That's kind of evolved, which has been fun, you know, or you can, you know, post a meme about seagulls and people know what that means.
Group members are constantly saying things like, oh, mother cracker, or ah, oh, sweat balls, that sort of thing. It's just become part of the way they communicate, the way they speak in everyday life, and it's quite awesome.
It is the culture of people who love books and who love words, and it's a particular love of the type of writing and language that TJ uses. And the culture around those words has created these lexicons and this Clune speak. So really, the Clunetic culture comes down to being a culture of people who love the same writer, who love the art of words, and who have taken on some of these words in their everyday speak. And it's changed language for people.
There are certain phrases that Clunetics have picked up and embraced wholeheartedly that we see over and over, and it's become kind of a shorthand for us, an emotional shorthand that we see across the Clunetics group and also in friend groups that have grown out of the Clunetics.
And the thing is, though, is we don't even consciously think about what we're saying anymore. It's become so part of our own culture and our own language that we don't recognize it unless somebody goes, huh, what are you talking about? But when you spend so much time talking to other Clunetics, they're not picking up that stuff. So they're just like, oh yeah, I understand what this is. So
we all know why you're here. You're here in this place of literature and knowledge to bear witness to the man, the myth, the legend, he who writes stories that fuel the imagination.
When I interviewed TJ for this episode, he was working on writing the fifth book of the Varenya series and gearing up to promote the release of The House in the Cerulean Sea for Tor. And one of the first things that I asked him about was whether he inserts specific words knowingly during his writing process. Is it his genius brain using language as a marketing tool to make every spoken interaction with a Clunetic also an opportunity to sell a book?
No, I don't think any of that.
Well, okay.
I don't think about any of that at all, because if I did, I would get too distracted with myself trying to be way more clever than I actually am. And that's not something that I can do. If when I'm writing, I'm solely focused on writing. I'm not thinking about how that might play into somebody's vernacular. I am solely focused on what I'm writing. I'm not necessarily thinking about an outside perspective or what these words could become in part of a culture. It's not something that I consider, because it's already difficult enough as it is for me to be completely entrenched in a book, and I need to have that focus on there because my mind runs at a billion miles per hour. And so if I'm trying to take all that other stuff into consideration, I'll never get anything done. So I am solely focused on my work and nothing more. I don't really necessarily think about what somebody's going to think about a specific thing.
So there are some phrases that you use regularly in your work. So is that unintentional as well?
No, it really depends upon what I'm writing. For a series like, say, for example, the Green Creek series, there is a connective tissue in the language in all four of those books. And that is intentional, because I wanted to show how this group of people are so connected in their families and in their lives and in their minds that they will start to, what friend groups do, you talk like each other, you mimic each other, and you say some of the same things. There are certain words or phrases that mean something different to your particular group than it might mean to somebody else. And I wanted that to just show, aside from the closeness of the family, just it obviously will take on a little bit of a mystical edge to it too, just given the nature of the books. But the important point for me is that it has a connective tissue, because although again the Green Creek series, these books are narrated by different characters for each book, but they're all part of the same family. And I would think that they would all end up at some point at least start to sound like each other at least a little bit while still maintaining their own personalities.
So within a world, there is some intentional use of shared language.
Yes.
But producers Angela and Mia say that it's more than that.
I think some of them are insular to the series, but there are, I don't want to say there are similarities in characters, because that's not correct. It's more like there are specific types of characters who give us specific kinds of language.
Expand upon that.
Sure. So in the Bear, Otter, and the Kid series, we have Bear. And Bear is a little dramatic and a little over the top, and he talks a lot, and he's going to say some ridiculous stuff. And then we can move to the obvious choice. We can move to Sam in the Verania series. He's going to be dramatic. He's going to be over the top. He's going to say some ridiculous stuff. We're going to look at Paul, and same thing. And these characters, vastly different characters, but they all have that common trait that we see. And so we'll see that kind of high octane behavior from those three. And they might not say the same things, but it's said in the same spirit. Mm.
The language is heightened.
It's heightened.
It speaks, like I'm hearing a lot of speaking in hyperbole.
Right.
You know?
Right. So even though this specific phrase may be for this specific series or character, it all starts to feel universal. Because even though some of these worlds don't touch, thematically they touch. Emotionally they touch.
And there are phrases as well that he uses all the time. You know, motes of dust, which first appeared in Wolfsong, actually appears in pretty much every book he's written since then. And it's obviously become something, you know, that visual, that the idea of dust in the sunlight or dust in the moonlight, it's become that thing that he uses all the time. And I think that's the secret sometimes to his language. And what he does is he does have certain phrases or certain ways of putting things that have become part of Clunespeak that we don't even think about.
Can you talk a little bit about the recurrence of colors and stars across the Cluniverse?
All the stars, all the colors. I think anybody who's read even one book of TJ's will pick up that he has favorite colors or favorite phases, favorite ideas that he goes back and reflects upon in his books, in each books. And with the stars, you know, obviously the stars are prevalent in the Tales of Verania because we have the Star Dragon. And last night as I was walking home from the gig that I was at, I was looking up at the stars, and you know, they're always there. Stars are a constant in our life. And I think in TJ's books, the stars are used as that constant. They're mentioned in Into This River. They're used in Wolfsong and the Green Creek series. It's something that's really constant, is the wishing upon the stars or the looking at the stars while you're thinking. And then we can move on to colours. Green is obviously a very dominant colour in TJ's books, and I think that might be a reflection of something that, you know, that's a favourite of his from his childhood. I don't know. I think he's maybe mentioned it somewhere. Green and blue are used a lot. There are things like crooked grins. A lot of his characters, in every book you'll have a character with a crooked grin. You'll have somebody with, you know, the wrinkles at the eyes.
His mouth twitching slightly upward. His eyes crinkled at the corners into these little lines.
And he uses colour a lot to define a scene. So, you know, Elizabeth is blue. And then when she's happy, she's green. When you think about, oh, God, what's the name of the book? The Immemorial series, right? So that series is very dark. And because it's, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic series, then the colours are dark. The blues that he mentions in there are a dark blue. And even if we look at Into This River, you know, blue is quite literal in Into This River. You know, Khalil is got blue wings, and blue is used a lot throughout that. And I think more than any other author that I've personally read, the greens, the blues, the golds, very much define who he is as a writer because of the way that he uses those colours to define, characterise, and almost set the scenes up and the characters.
So we have language that's used within a series to show character connections, and types of language that connect one series to another, and specific repeated phrases that TJ uses over and over in different books. And the Clunatics pull from all of it, adopt it, and use these words and phrases and ideas to foster a sense of community with one another.
Well, I think it's interesting because culture is something that's often intrinsic. It's an accident of birth, it's an accident of geography, and culture is often regionalized. But I think the Clunatic culture is building a community culture. So it's a bit organic and new. It's like a subculture, which I think's fascinating.
As I alluded to earlier, Jane, or Skeever Jane, as you may know her in the Clunatic group, is a bit of an expert on language. She is a bilingual high school teacher with a master's of education in second language acquisition. At the moment, she's working on her PhD, investigating why students in her state of Queensland, Australia, are not continuing with languages.
And it's a heavily online culture, and also a heavily introverted culture in a lot of ways, which is, I think, is really sort of interesting and intriguing as to how we sort of, I mean, you and I are sitting here on two different parts of the world, and really the only thing that's brought us together is we've read some of the same books. And we're building narrative around that, relationships around that, common dialogue. We have a bit of a shorthand. You know, if I say truth corn to you, we know exactly why that's funny and what that is. And so I think it's interesting, and then it's dynamic, it's new, and the fact that it's largely online based in a lot of ways, it's both low tech and high tech in terms of, at the low tech end, it's about the paperback book, but on the high tech end, it's about us creating a global network around that. So I think it's kind of fascinating, and it's a new kind of culture too. There's something about the culture of the group, about that shared language that we have, that really resonates with me. And I think it's a lot of it's down to TJ's, the breadth of his writing. You know, he's writing in a number of genres. I mean, to read The Lightning Struck Heart, I was like, oh, there's my high fantasy. He's, in terms of his writing, it's very dimensional. It covers many worlds. And so I think it includes a lot more readers than other authors would do. Some authors that are, you know, write one thing and stick with that. So I think that the reason the group is so unique is because TJ's writing is quite unique. There's not many authors that embrace that many genre effectively. But there's something about the Clunatics that it does feel like there's a conversation for everyone. Whereas in other groups, it seems to be, there might be two or three people that get together. It doesn't have this sort of global intensity that I see around TJ's work. And what the catalyst is for that, I don't know. Why it's ended up like that, why people are making lifelong friendships, I can't explain, but I think it's immensely heartwarming.
And it turns out that using these easy references to reach out and have interactions with other Clunatics isn't just reserved for specific words or phrases. Yes, fans pull language and culture from TJ's work, the Cluniverse, as it were, but also the Clunatics is its own entity, and it has its own obsessions, like unicorns.
I was, like, so surprised that so many people would kind of embrace this idea, really, of just coming together and talking books and posting a lot of pictures about unicorns. And yeah,
I don't know if TJ hit this book right before the unicorn exploded onto the national scene in the way that it did, if he's a prophet of the unicorn, or if he saw it coming and was like, all right, let's do this. But Jiminy Crickets, has this group embraced the unicorn, and to a lesser extent, the dragon. But, you know, there are just certain underpinnings to this group.
And a colleague of mine, Reg, who's the blokiest bloke who ever bloked, used to go, you're re-listening to that gay unicorn book again, aren't you? And I'd be like, yep.
Is that person dressed like a unicorn? Josie asked. Where have I seen that before? Sure enough, a man was walking down the street in rainbow tights, a white tail hanging from the back, and a horn sticking out of his head. Quincy frowned. That looks like the character from one of my books. Weird.
Being forbidden to enjoy movies made by a certain explosion-loving director.
And then there are things that we've kind of embraced as a culture where in group you'll see it more as, you know, don't let TJ hear you say that. Gus hates Michael Bay. And then that translates over into our community.
For all he knew, he'd be on shift at Applebee's and a producer would see him and say that his face was exactly what he was looking for in his latest movie involving gigantic robots fighting each other and destroying cities with little regard to human life and or property damage. He would most likely have to run in front of a green screen in slow motion while holding the hand of a beautiful woman who was inappropriately dressed for a robot apocalypse, but he could do it. As long as it wasn't directed by Michael Bay, he could do it. And if Mr. Bay was involved, he would have to politely decline this random man in the booth at Applebee's who had ordered artichoke dip because there was a dude in Oregon who Josie cared for very much who believed Mr. Bay was a soulless husk of a human being and potentially a mass murderer.
And then there are the ducks. The mysterious banning of ducks.
I'm just gonna say it, fucking ducks. What if I never saw another duck post again in my life in the group, I'd be very happy.
There are certain things that apparently people posted in that group now that are not allowed to be posted about. And so I get every now and then I'll get an alert on my phone that says keyword used in the Clunatic group that, and I'm like, oh, what does this mean? And it's about like ducks or stuff. And I have no idea what's going on with that. So I just said, okay, you know what? There's a reason I don't need to know. And I'm going to trust the people that are in charge and let them deal with it.
All will be made clear if you listen to the podcast.
Oh, dear God. I want to know if I want to know what's going on in there.
The duck story has been explored.
And the reason I say that is because there was a post that happened to be about ducks and the fact that they have spiral penises, and it went mad.
So I love animals. I'm all about something educational. And there's a beautiful YouTube series called True Facts, and it's true facts about animals. It's narrated by a guy called Zifronk, and he puts on these amazing voices, and he narrates about these animals' lives almost like they're in a neighborhood, and he gives them names. It's Bob and Sheila and Jerry stopped doing that. And So I really enjoy them. And one came up about ducks. It was one of the very first ones I found. And it was hilarious about these feathery perverts and how awful they are and what they do to each other and what a horrendous species the duck is. So I shared it in the group. And it was early days, but there's still a relatively small group. And it is truly hilarious. It's 5 minutes of just the horror show that is the duck as a species.
And people really just embraced the stupid idea of ducks, and everything suddenly became ducks.
And then people started sharing duck memes, and it got duckier.
And so we had to put a blanket ban on duck posts, which seems ridiculous, but there are things like that sometimes just go too far.
And so they went, that's it, no more duck posting at all.
And we do explain every now and then. And then people are like, what? And then, of course, the people who love the duck thing jump in and they're all like, blah, 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 we want to have the ducks. And then it's like, nah, we're shutting it down again.
So most people have only come in to the point where they're like, why, what's the issue with ducks? And I'm like, look, I just love nature, okay?
So ducks is not even a TJ Klune thing. It's just a Klunatic thing.
Well, yes, but I declare it is now canon because Josie mentions in How to Be a Movie Star getting stoned and chasing ducks. So technically now TJ has mentioned ducks, so they are canon.
Josie hoped he hadn't wandered off to find a pond with ducks in it. He'd done that once back in Los Angeles, and it hadn't turned out well for anyone involved. The police hadn't been amused when they'd arrived.
Right. I don't believe the admin will buy into that. But I stand by my duck stance.
No ducks allowed. Please, for the love of God.
We now know that ducks exist in the TJ Klune shared universe.
They do. Okay. A very minor, minor role, but it was a salve to my wounds.
Actually, when I met TJ last year, when I was over in the US, he was like, what the fuck's with the ducks?
I casually asked about it when we were at a Klunatic gathering, and I was told you don't want to know. And so I said, okay. And then I left it.
That almost makes it sound more mysterious and weird than it really is.
Oh, okay. Well, now in my head, I've already built it up to be this hugely traumatic incident that I don't want any part of. So with the true story, it'll probably be much less than that. So I'll feel better.
I think the duck thing and all the obsessions really have to do with finding your people and being a part of the joke. You're inside the inside joke, so it's very easy to understand the excitement and motivation that lead to getting carried away. It speaks to the middle schooler in me, the middle schooler that exists inside all of us that never goes away, that feeling of, I'm a part of something.
No fucking ducks.
Okay, I get it, no ducks. How about puns? This is producer Johnny again.
My favorite posts on the page are probably going to be the puns. I'm a big pun fan, so if they're dad puns or any puns that relate to anything, that's going to get an automatic love from me.
Is your name Chapstick because you're da bomb?
You remember admin Elaine from our last episode? She had this to say about the relevance of puns within clunatic culture.
A good pun is funny and elegant in a way, and really very intellectually satisfying. So, you know, that's one thing. It's just it's a beautiful, mentally satisfying thing. And also, humor is just really good for brightening up someone's day. So when I see someone who's, you know, not feeling very good or is going through a tough time, I just want to make them smile for a moment, even if it's like a face-palmy sort of smile.
He was snapped out of his daydream of a cat wearing a sheriff's uniform riding its horse in a dusty western town.
You think you can come and rob my bank? You gotta be kidding me.
So if telling a terrible joke or making a dreadful pun will get that, then I'll do it. And I guess, why do I think word play is important? Well, the thing about puns is, apart from their entertainment value, they really make you think. So to get a pun, you have to be able to see, you know, sort of every possible meaning that could be implied by the punning keyword. So you have to understand context and how the pun alters the meaning. And appreciating a pun sort of implies being able to appreciate one or more alternate scenarios. And to me, I sort of think that's really only about a step away from being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. So, you know, a pun to me means humor, intelligence, and a sort of emotional depth. So why do I think that's important? Well, aren't all these things the things that make life good?
And those last things that admin Elaine said about puns requiring intelligence and emotional depth and the capacity for empathy struck me really hard, because it highlighted something else that kept showing up in interviews, and it's a theme that we'll see over and over again as we explore more of TJ's books and his fan base in upcoming episodes. Inclusivity. Both Jane and Tanya see it as being imperative to clunatic culture.
Another consistent theme or pattern is that of inclusivity, which I think is extremely important. Particularly as I've taught teenagers for so long, and I know that diversity and inclusivity is the key to building resilience in young people, having young people that can face the world successfully. So those are the two patterns that I see in the culture, as well as a big underlying well of kindness in the group. I've never seen a group that reaches out to people who are struggling, who checks in on each other like this.
Inclusiveness. Clunatic culture is amazing.
He decided right then and there that he needed to be friends with Qbert.
I love that everyone is there right away to say, hey, it's okay. How can I help? You know, what can we do? What do you need? Do you just need to vent? Do you need help? It's there. There's no question. I love that.
Josie knew that the positive reinforcement was always something he liked. So he said quite loudly,
I think you're doing amazing and that you're a good person.
It's a space where you're allowed to come in and share your greatest highs, your greatest lows. If you have a problem, you can come in, vent to the group, places where you, if you don't feel safe, talking on your own Facebook page or talking with your friends or family, you can come and say, hey, you know, I'm going through a rough time. And everybody will listen.
And it had hit Josie out of nowhere. The realization that he'd built a family on his own.
Everybody will offer encouragement. It's a place where you can share your battles and share your victories. And everybody's excited for you. Clunatic culture is family. I don't know what else to say about it except it's a safe place where people can be who they are without judgment and without fear.
They were happy when he was happy. And when he wasn't, they would do everything they could to fix it, knowing he would do the same for them.
And that's a great thing, because a lot of people don't have that in their real life. And I mean, not to say that this isn't real life, but, you know, they may not have a safe space where they can say the things that they need to or they want to. And of course, we can gush over TJ and the books that bring us closer together.
They loved him for all the things he was and not all the things he wasn't.
Things that speak to us, things that bring us together. It's just a joyful place.
We get these people in our lives, people who change the way we see things. They're so bright, just like the sun. And all you want to do is stay in their light because it makes everything warm. They make everything better.
Which goes back to what the admin said in our last episode. This is Lisa.
We have to be inclusive. It's supposed to be a safe space.
He's built a great community where we can all talk about what it's like for us. It's weird, but he says it's okay to be weird. And that makes me feel better. I don't have to justify myself to anyone here. For a little while, I feel like I can breathe.
Sweatballs. Epic and awesome.
Mothercrackers. Sweet molasses.
Cool. Cool. Cool.
Oh my god, what the hell?
Code orange banana.
Really? Yeah. That's what you're going with?
Capitalized. Now it's true.
Listening to the Clunatics use Clunespeak got me thinking about the implications of them using it in their everyday lives with people that haven't read or listened to TJ's work.
It makes me think about the potential, too, for words like that to be used almost to evangelize TJ's work, that, you know, if we're walking around saying weird shit like that, hashtag truth and corn, and somebody goes, excuse me, what? Well, there's your opening.
Exactly. Say, you have to read this great book.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting how language could be used to do that as well. Mm. It makes me think of, like, I grew up Catholic, and so there's a whole vernacular that sometimes you can tell when somebody says a certain thing and it's like, oh,
right.
Same team. Like, yeah. I got what you meant, even though it's totally different from the situation we're in. But like, I get what you mean because you said that. Yeah. Someday we'll all just be spreading the gospel of TJ Clune.
Hey, I'm all for it.
Do you ever find yourself using the Clunatic lexicon outside of your chats?
I sure
has do. It entered your real life, and when that's happened, what has the reaction been?
I think most often it bleeds off at home, and my family's aware. That said, I have been known to pimp TJ Clune's books in my operatory as a dental hygienist, and I will take literally any opportunity I can to open that conversation. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm going to teach you about your teeth. I'm going to do my job. You're going to know everything you need to know about oral hygiene before you walk out of my door.
But when you've got their mouth open,
but when, and,
you,
exactly.
and you say, do you floss daily? And they go, uh-huh.
And like
you say, you're a lying liar who lies.
A lying liar who lies. Right.
And they're like, well, that's a humorous way of saying that. And you're like,
let me
here's
tell
a book.
You. Yeah. So often in an hour, I will do my job. I will give them all the information they need to know for their health. I will get their life story, and they will leave with an appointment card for their 6-month appointment and a list of TJ Clune books that they should probably read. That's the truth. And so if it sneaks in outside of it, I will tell people. If they say, what are you saying? what are you talking about, Angela? I will tell them what I am talking about. I will tell them exactly what I am talking about.
So the lexicon is also a way for you to evangelize the work.
Yes.
I will be very curious when I talk to TJ to ask him if that is a strategy.
Right. Clunatic world domination.
It would be very smart. It's mm-hmm. good marketing to have a whole army of people out in the world
speaking
our
language,
your weird little words.
but they're engaging. They're funny as hell.
Well, one thing that had come up in conversation that I was wondering about is like the way that people now use these crazy things like hashtag truthcorn and best friends. I mean, there are people out in the world using this language, and there are people like they're putting it on their clothing. Mm-hmm. Like that's marketing. Like that's
it is marketing. I mean, somebody not even at some on their point, clothing, they're putting it on their bodies. And yeah. that blows my mind.
But you didn't plan that.
No, not at all. How could I? I would never think of anything like that. It's not something that I go into thinking, oh, I bet people are going to talk about this all the freaking time. That's not how I work. I can't have that focus, because if I do, you'll be able to tell in my work that I'm trying way too damn hard. Like, for example, right now I'm writing the Tales from Verania book 5. And to be honest, I'm like 45,000 words into it, and maybe 40,000 of those words are utter crap, because I'm rusty getting back into this world, and I know it, and I can feel I'm rusty. And there is a point where I reached last week that I thought, man, you are trying too hard. You are trying too hard to make this how it used to be with the other books. You need to dial it back. You need to stop. You need to focus and do what you're trying to do. And that's why I can't think about how what this might do to language outside of what I'm focusing on. I can't have that, because if I do, it's going to show that I'm trying way too hard, and people are going to be able to tell, and that's not something that I want.
I think the importance of Clunespeak goes back to something that TJ said at the start of this episode.
I wanted to show how this group of people are so connected.
Maybe part of the secret to the fast bonds made by Clunatics has to do with them already speaking the same language. That being able to easily communicate with one another using a kind of emotional shorthand while embracing the themes of inclusivity and acceptance in TJ's books, all within the safe share space of the Clunatics Facebook group, is a formula for creating the found family that they call Pack, Pack, Pack. So for those of you who are new to the Cluniverse, maybe those of you who just read The House in the Cerulean Sea and are looking for more, consider this your official invitation to join the Clunatics on Facebook. You'll be hard-pressed to find a more welcoming, loving group of people. And I have it on good authority that you'll become fluent in Clunespeak in no time.
There's a reason why when people move to a new land or a new country or a new community, they would gravitate to the people who spoke their language. You know, it's good to be understood, and that feels like home. And so to come into this as a new member, and to even if you just recognize one from the one book that you've read, oh my gosh, yes, these people know what I'm talking about. And then it draws you in, it pulls you in.
Whoa, Josie said it all. I didn't know there were books like that.
And I'm excited to see what new language is embraced and added to our world as he continues.
The spectrum of the Cluniverse is just, I mean, it's that's why we call it a Cluniverse, because it's never ending and constantly expanding like the universe.
Sounds like a cult. It's remarkable. And if it's a cult, then hand me the Kool-Aid.
I think we're going to spend the rest of our episodes exploring all of this. Repeated language and themes, the ever-expanding Cluniverse, and what it means to be a Clunatic. Which brings us back to our original question.
How would you describe a Clunatic? What are the characteristics of a typical Clunatic, if such a thing exists?
I would say naughty and gentle. Yeah.
Aww.
Naughty and gentle. Yeah.
That's really sweet, actually. And a little salty. I like it.
You know, we're talking about people who can reference specific incidents in TJ's books, and we've adopted a lot of sort of TJ phrases. There's definitely a common sort of sense of humor, awkwardness, book love in the group. And the thing about just the whole Clunatics being able to quote and reference scenes from the book, none of it is, you know, like, none of it feels artificial. It's just how it is. And I think that might be one of the signs of TJ's genius, really, that the things that he comes up with, like Mother Cracker and Sweet Molasses, they're so unique, but at the same time, they feel very natural. They just roll off the tongue. You sort of feel like things like this must always have been because they feel so right.
Here's producer Sita.
It's hard to kind of give a set list because one of the great things about the group is everyone is so different and everyone else kind of embraces each other's differences, and like maybe that's what being a Clunatic is like, accepting people just how they are, how they come. And yeah, maybe that's the defining characteristic.
To me, that sounds like hashtag truthcorn. If you want to learn more about the language of the Clunatics, we've created a database just for you on our website. Visit clunaticspodcast.com/dictionary to look up terms you've heard on the podcast today, to request that a word or phrase be explained, or to submit your own Clunespeak definition. To become Clune fluent, or cluent, hey, I just made up a new one, visit clunaticspodcast.com/dictionary. The Clunatics podcast is produced by Susanna Frigo, Louis Garcia, Angela Noel-Mohn, Sita Rajasingham, Mia Skabaris, John Steiger, and me. This episode was written by Angela Noel-Mohn. If you like what you heard, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this episode. We'd also love it if you told a friend. If you really, really liked what you heard and you'd like to support the podcast with a financial contribution, hit the donate button at clunaticspodcast.com. Anything we collect that exceeds our operating costs for the podcast will be donated to the Trevor Project. Additional information about the podcast, including episode transcripts and links to all our social media, is also available at clunaticspodcast.com. You can find out more about me and my work at kirtreads.com. That's kirtreads.com. All music and sound effects heard in this episode are licensed by Storyblocks Audio.